everyone, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap. It's September the 14th of 2016.
I was waiting for you to do a call. I was gonna have a big and that's me.
I'm never gonna say your name now. I'm gonna make a deliberate effort to not say your name at all.
Everyone's gonna be in a big mystery then. Unless they just read right above my square.
Or they're regular listeners of the podcast too.
No, there's none of those.
Wow. I'm surprised then that we've got this constantly rotating listening group.
I take Stan Lee's quote literally, where he's like, every comic is somebody's first, that every comic is everybody who's reading it's their first comic. So every podcast, it's this is the first time anyone has heard it before.
Mm-hmm.
Every time it's a complete new set of listeners.
Yes.
Now for our guest, which needs no introduction.
Right.
Ooh, I'm a ghost camel.
Oh, wow. We've never had a ghost or a camel on the show.
Excuse you. I've been a ghost camel my entire life. I was here ghost cameling my first appearance.
Oh. Well, okay.
How could you forget?
We can check off a whole bunch of different quotas then that I didn't know that we had to
fill. Yeah, we could finally get rid of that equal opportunity spectral issue that we've been having for so long. They're like, you know what? It's fine if it's two white guys in the podcast, but can you at least have some, supernatural representation every now and then?
Or, some other member of the animal kingdom. Come on, guys. Humanity is such a small minority, but it acts like it's the only one that exists.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? By the way, how are you doing, Annalise, first and foremost?
I'm doing all right. Sleepy, but...
You can sleep through the podcast if you want. We'll shout when Black Clover and World Trigger
come. Black Clover, wait. Black Clover, what?
Where? Asta,
What? I sleep through every episode.
Nick just draws, eyes on his eyelids, Jughead from Archie. And every time.
Which is crazy, because his eyes were never open anyway.
Yeah. And it's also kind of crazy, because if you were doing that, I don't know how you're leading the show. You handle most of the series on the recap. I don't know who's leading them at that point.
I sleep read, I guess.
That's pretty impressive. How are you when you're awake if you're asleep right now?
I'm the biggest asshole on the planet, I guess.
Okay, you can stay asleep. Sleep forever, Nick.
You heard it. I have permission now.
I've been putting together recently a bucket list, Nick. Things I want to do before I die. I got a lot of unique.
Are you sick, Chris?
No.
Are you sick?
No. Okay. I've been evaluating life. And I'm like, there's a lot of things I still want to do. So why don't I put them down on paper, give myself something
have
to focus
goal.
On. Yeah. Focus on some of these things, see it there and strive towards them. One of them I have is I want to, places I want to visit. So, want to visit Ireland, want to visit, most of the big U.S. cities. Another one is Japan. Mm-hmm. I really want to visit Japan, and I feel like that needs to be a weekly manga recap thing. I feel like together the two of us can take over Japan. It'll be like Lost in Translation, except without any of, the sexual aspects.
No. You guys have to go doujin shopping. So you'll have a different sexual aspect.
So we'll go doujin shopping. Annalisa will have to show us where all the good doujin shops are.
Aw, yeah.
Annalisa will have to show us where everything is, though, because we'll just be these two ignorant-ass white guys who will be domo arigato?
I'll be like, Nick, please. I speak their language. Binks no sake, da 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 da. Yo ho ho ho. Hold on, let me get back to the refrain.
One piece.
Yo ho. So bad. I do the
guitar. Who's the gorgeousness?
They're like, doujin right here. I'm like, thank you.
I'm your opaid. Oh god. Well, I don't think Nothing that can happen in One Piece this week could possibly top that conversation, so let's just skip it, I guess.
No, we need to focus on One Piece this week.
But we do have our regular series to talk about. Minus Bleach, of course. That's still going to take some getting used to. It's been a couple of weeks now, and I'm still like, what? We don't have time for any Bleach to talk about. I've got to get angry about some other series even more now.
How did you feel? We didn't have you on during Blogist, Annalise. How did you enjoy Bleach's ending?
Enjoy such a strong
word. So the first time I read it, I was like, well, I guess it's not that bad because it could be so much worse. And then you guys were talking about it, and I was like, I guess I didn't really think about this. It's like, oh no, it's pretty bad. I was like, oh yeah. So I was just like, okay, here are characters. I guess they're not dead. That's a good thing.
I wish we could be responsible for the opposite feeling more often. You know, because it's one thing where, you know, you have something negative to say about a series, and there's really only a couple of ways that people can respond to it. You can either disagree and say, no, it was good, or you can agree and say, oh, you said exactly what I was thinking, or you can go, oh, yeah, I guess it was really bad. And you can do the same things if you have, you know, a positive thing to say about something and it just goes in the opposite direction. But wouldn't it be so much more enjoyable for someone to be like, oh, I never thought of it that way. That's really cool. Thanks, Weekly Manga Recap.
Simply like, you fuckers ruined the thing I like.
Well, you know, once you guys started really enjoying World Trigger, I don't know if at the time we just had, like, our circles of friends were the same or whatever, but all of a sudden I started seeing an increase of World Trigger fans, so maybe you changed some minds with that.
Yeah, Weekly Manga Recap bump going.
I feel like that has to be some small ass. I feel like, you know, in some ways, us turning around on World Trigger had to result in some aspect. Not that we're responsible for anything. That's an arrogant and douchey thing to say. But I do feel
you
like...
You helped discover it.
Yeah, I think that's maybe what I'm kind of going with. I feel like people have started to tune into it, at least from hearing how much we enjoy that series so much.
Or even if it's not that, it could just be a correlation as opposed to a causation. Like, when we started to turn around on it was when the series actually started getting good, and so people started liking it.
Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to, ultimately. Because I wouldn't respect my opinion if I was a listener. I'd be like, look at this guy.
No. You know,
look at those flip-flopping assholes. Now they think the V-face is cute instead of thinking it's stupid.
That was just the counter every week, how many duck faces.
Oh, that was it. We didn't even bother to recap. Just like, there were 7 duck faces this chapter. 7!
And now it's, because we put up the poll for Weekly Manga Recap Lives, the series where we voice act chapters. And I put up the poll, and I kind of knew some of the ones that would get high amounts of votes. Like, I knew that the final chapter, Bleach, would get votes. Like, people would just want to see that. The World Trigger chapter, which is not honestly that eventful of a chapter. It just has a funny, it's a coma squad being a coma squad. That's within 2 votes of beating Bleach as
because
the number one series.
Because coma squad.
Because the coma squad is fucking amazing, yeah.
It's astonishing to me, though.
I have not met anyone that doesn't just love Ecoma Squad. I'm so happy.
I kind of wish we had a spin-off series focusing on them. But maybe it was best to have this in small doses, not spoil it for ourselves.
Yeah.
I want to see a spin-off where it's just them, like, going and eating at different places, like a new cafeteria menu, and, you know, giving their opinions, which would just be like, oh, it's so good, wow, try this, eggplant curry.
They've got like a cute waitress serving them and they're arguing over which of them should talk to her.
Yes,
you're the one who looks good, you should talk to her. It's like, no, I'm not really that good looking, but if we try and hit on her, then we'll get kicked out. And then we won't get our eggplant curry. We'll have to save that for later on, though. We've got a whole bunch of series to get to talk about before we get to World Trigger. But let's start with Annalise's other favorite series that we talk about. Black Clover.
Black Clover!
Age 77, whoever's strongest wins. Last time, the captain of the Golden Dawn unleashed his big-ass Yggdrasil giant tree magic over the entire base that was being attacked. And we open this chapter with Asta and company arriving on the scene and taking in the sight of the massive tree. Asta says something stupid. Not surprisingly. He says, stuff like that grows here? No. How can he be surprised by anything when he lives in a world of magic?
Well, there could be a large magic tree something.
So, okay.
I like how when Charmy gets karate chopped on the head, she even goes la.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, bonk. Ah!
It's just, I still don't really get that. That's just her thing, just going, la.
No.
Well, it's just one A, so it's just like a quick sound, like, la.
Sometimes when she's like, going into battle, she goes, la, and stuff like that.
Maybe she's like a Pokemon sometimes. Like, the only things she could say are la and food. And, like, occasionally she just works other words in.
She has to make a comment about food if she's not saying la.
Yeah.
Yeah, that explains a whole lot, guys.
She does. She's a sheep Pokemon with food gimmick. Which isn't that crazy, considering the new generation of Pokemon they're showing us.
No, she's a Marie.
Yeah.
Yami points out it's probably the Shiny Brigade Captain spell. It's such a... That sounds like he was making wanking motions as he said it. Oh yeah, Shiny Brigade Captain probably did this.
You know, I wouldn't put it past him.
I will admit that I made a dumb the first time I read through this chapter. Because Finneral immediately reacts by going, oh, well, they probably don't need us here then. Let's just go back home. When I saw that word bubble, I was trying to figure out, like, did Charmy or Asta say it? To come here? What? And then I read it again, it's like, oh, right, Finneral's there, duh. It's just because he's, you know, just this tiny little shape through the entire appearance. You don't even see his face the entire little two-page dialogue they have. But the rest of the chapter is essentially the Golden Dawn kicking ass. What's his face? Super aristocratic William?
Vangeance. How can you forget that name?
Vangeance. He fights against the clay creation guy from the Diamond Kingdom, who sort of covers himself in armor. Launches, I guess, projectiles from his clay, but Vengeance easily deflects him and starts to knock him away. He actually casts throws, I guess, a seed at him, which then sprouts into a tree completely around him and is, like, feeding off of his energy.
Kind of looks like it crushes him.
Because a tree just kind of grows around him, and yeah, it's like entangling him in the roots.
Well, you could see like blood or something shooting out of the roots. Is that correct?
I just assumed it was the clay, but it could be blood. I mean, he's pretty phased out on the next page. I mean, but
yeah, I'm trying to
that
think.
Could just be his energy.
Oh, okay. I think I do see. Okay, I think I see. The art was a little hard for me to read there, but yeah, you can see his face poking out like to the bottom of the roots. Yeah. So I guess it's just laying on top of them.
But Vengeance, in casting this spell, fails to see the sneak attack coming!
Yeah!
As Lotus comes in from a cloud of smoke, gets ready to attack, and he's like, oh shit, no! But Yami comes flying in, and with his sword, dissipates the smoke cloud that Lotus has summoned and manages to inflict a minor wound on him. And Yami then looks over his shoulder and Vengeance like, excuse me, shiny oddball mask dude. It's like, you can tell he's like, he doesn't like him, does he? Like, he really doesn't like him.
I wonder, like, I always thought he didn't like him, but then in the last chapter, I think it was, he was like, hey, I'm going to go help him out. And I was like, maybe, or he said something like, I'm worried about him. And I was like, is he really worried about him? Like, maybe it's just one of those friendship things where he just, like, makes fun of him all the time. I don't know, but I don't like William, so.
I have to believe that Yami is just the one dude in the Black Knight, or in the Magic Knights, who's like, clearly this guy is evil. I mean, clearly he's evil. Look at this guy.
Look at this douchebag. Look at this shiny oddball mask.
Clearly this is a bad guy.
That would make me so happy.
So, Lois is not happy to see that Yami has backup. And he's like, oh, my sneak attack failed. I thought I could help us out by killing him. Oh. But then he actually recalls Yami from his younger days. Had they established before this point that Lotus had encountered Yami in the past?
Yeah, when they first, when Lotus was first introduced, I think Lux said something about the Black Bulls, or maybe he saw him, and he's like, oh, your leader. Oh, yeah, I fought him. He's really strong. Something like that. It's like volume 2, so it's way back.
yeah. And he's like, hey, Van, just yell me one for saving your ass. Hey, old diamond dude, I don't know. You feel like surrendering? This is just the chapter of Yami being completely dismissive of everybody. I love Lotus's reaction, because he's narrating to himself, he's like, all right, this is bad news. I must show them the soul of the diamonds right now and retreat! And summons a carriage and runs away.
This is what his lazy hustle car, I think.
Yeah. Like,
Lotus is easily one of my favorite characters. It's Lotus and Fineral for me, so I'm so happy that he came back. And he was really cool, even though he didn't really accomplish anything.
He didn't get completely owned like one of the generals of the Diamond Kingdom, though.
I mean,
whose ass he needed to save.
People were saying in the chat earlier, like, yeah, he's a smart fighter. I mean, he's the one that discovered that William was, you know, planting the spell. He's the one that saved the general.
He's the one that almost got one up on Vengeance, too.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Would have ruined all of the... Oh, man, Lotus is the hero we deserve, isn't he? He would have completely saved the kingdom, and no one would ever have known about it. Meanwhile, back with the observers, Asta is kind of just kicking his legs around because his arms are useless. He's like, evacuate everyone! Come this way! The way I'm waving with my legs!
See, I figured you might like this because he's doing what he does best, using his mouth. he's just a warning system in this.
That's his role in the entire series from now on. Hey guys, there's something really cool over there! Ah, there goes the alarm system. Awesome.
That compliment that someone's really good at using their mouth has a much different connotation in my circles usually.
Well, I think it's time for you to start a new fan fiction series.
The Black Clover.
Well, this is the reunion of Yuno and Asta, so there you go.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's when I'm done with World Trigger, I'll just move on to Black Clover, and it's just going to be complete yaoi fan fiction. Like, there won't even be a female character involved. Noelle will just come by to state her disapproval on everything.
Meanwhile, is up in the sky fighting lightning-themed general guy, who makes the comment, "Let my beautiful magic shatter you!" And Yuno says, "Beauty doesn't matter in a fight. It's simply whoever's strongest wins." And he summons a sword, a giant sword that pierces through the guy's chest, too, and he goes, "So beautiful!" Ah! And wrecks the building as he crashes into it. So, Yuno beats one of the generals of the Diamond Kingdom, which is apparently a fucking joke, I guess.
These guys must not be the important ones.
Probably not. Maybe they're like... They're those lower tier Spriggan 12 members, you know.
Yeah.
So beautiful. It's like, beauty! Beauty, 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 beauty!
Beautiful! Shiny! Sparkle desert! Desert, desert, desert!
Desert is more beautiful. It just turns into, what's this?
A geel.
It just turns into a geel. Yuno lands on the ground, having caught sight of Asta. He's like, what are you doing here? But he notes, the fact that you're all beaten up like that means you got stronger again, didn't you? Are, Are you sure that makes sense? You know?
It makes sense with Asta. It means he was pushed to the edge, and since he's still alive, he had to come. Anybody else, it makes absolutely no sense. But with
Can
Asta,
you imagine if Asta was just like, gosh. No, I got my shit handed to me. Like, completely, this guy just came in and want my ass and then broke my arms.
And, you know, you could see Finral's like, what?
But, you know, smiles at Asta and says, I'm not losing to you, which gets Sylph all jealous. Because she's like, oh no, my Yuno is happy because of someone other than me. I still don't like Yuno.
But look how well this solidifies this pairing. Look, they each have their harems. Like, Yuno's got a...
They're ignorant of because they're gay for each other.
Exactly. Like, to be honest, I'd like Asta to end up with Rebecca or Noelle, but this is the canon pairing. Look at them.
Alisa, please. Rebecca is never going to be an important character. Never.
You can play for next chapter.
She's never going to show up again because she's not important to the story at all.
Okay, so I have to agree with you, Nick. I find Yuno really boring. Like, I like Yuno, but he's not interesting to me. Like, I like Asta a lot. I like that he's a bundle of energy. I think he's really fun. I think he's annoying at times, but I think, you know, overall he's fun. But Yuno just, he's really strong, and he's in love with Asta.
I think that there's...
His magic looks cool.
It's fine. There needs to be more of an emphasis on what separates him from Asta. Because the only thing that they've really got going for them is the red Oni blue Oni thing. Asta is enthusiastic and happy about everything, and Yuno is generally calm most of the time.
Yeah.
But he's so calm that he comes off as robotic a lot of the time. That comment that he has, that big moment in this chapter that he has about, you know, all that matters is whoever is strongest. You know, things like beauty and all that stuff, they don't matter to a fight. That seems like something that would work really well if you had this cold, analytical personality attached to him. Someone who was just so focused on efficiency that they didn't care about anything else. And maybe his friendship and rivalry with Asta was the only thing that got him to break that. And I think that that's what they're going for with this betrayal and what Sylph is saying about him. But he doesn't seem cold and distant. He just seems dull and boring.
He seems like he's bored with everything except Asta. Mm-hmm.
I feel like they need to just give him a little bit more personality traits. Because you look at, like, a lot of the great, like, rivalry kind of pairings out there. You know, like a Yugi Kaiba, an Ichigo and Ryu. Like, you can usually just give the opposite more traits that kind of define them immediately. Whereas with Yuno, I mean, part of it is also we don't get much time with him. I mean, we made a joke about how he's always on the front page cover, but he hasn't been in the series for a while.
And you know what? And also, on every front page cover that he's in, he's always doing this.
Yeah. But just that sense that you don't actually get a whole lot of it. Like this, if we got more scenes like what we got here, where you're actually seeing him kind of interact with another character that's not Asta, then maybe we'd be able to analyze a bit more about him. But it's kind of tough because we only get snippets of him and not a lot that really delves into his personality.
Yeah, he's one of the first characters we're introduced to in the series, but he has some of the least development. I mean, the Wizard King, we've seen him more often, I think, at this point. Like, Wizard King has so much more personality and character to him than Yuno does. And like I said, like I generally like Yuno. I mean, but he's boring.
Yeah, I don't dislike him. He could stand with like getting like a sassy character quirk or something like that.
Well, like maybe having
he just becomes like the gay best friend.
Oh, I love that. Like every like fucking.
Oh, Asta, honey, you need to really start opening your eyes about all these girls that are trying to get up on you.
Like Sylph's like, I can't believe that you were smiling for Asta. He's like, girl, you know that I love you.
Now, help me look pretty for my man.
Yeah. Now, come on, let's get some... I got some twerking going on tonight. I gotta be on fleek faster.
Oh, my God.
Honey, let's hit the club and pick up some dudes. Why don't you just go out with me? No, no, honey, you're not getting what I'm putting down.
Girl, there's something you're not picking up on. I don't know how many times I got a Z snap before you're gonna figure it out. I'm just gonna keep doing it. You'll figure it out.
I've got to figure out what the magical sprite equivalent of flaming is in order to teach it to you.
He's like, what? No, you're wind. You're not a fire mage. I don't understand.
It's like, I thought you fairies are supposed to be all aboard with this stuff.
You're not the only
I read Shakespeare.
Mm.
I really hope, though, that having Sylph enhances his character. She seems like she's kind of just around. I mean, he's not using magic every time she's out. She's just kind of out. Mm. So I hope that maybe having her around will improve his character, like bring out aspects that usually he'd be stoic on. I don't know. I want him to get more character.
And I'm actually afraid that Sylph is going to have the opposite impact on him. Because if you have a character around that's going to be emotive and reactive to a bunch of things, and is going to be omnipresent whenever another character is around, then they can react to situations just so the other character doesn't have to.
Yeah, so that would be... I hope that doesn't turn out to be the case, but that's definitely a possibility. I have a theory regarding Yuno. Well, more specifically, Yuno has that pendant. I will eat my sock if that's not a magic stone.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Because they mention early on, like, the first chapter that it's... This guy tries to steal it, and they're like, this is not something a...
Right, right.
It's something a noble will have, and since Fuego Leon had his as a necklace as well, and they all have the similar markings, that's my guess.
Right.
Now, how dirty is this sock you're going to be eating if it's wrong?
It would only be after one day of wearing.
Okay.
Hmm. It's not going to be that nasty. I'm sorry.
Can I put it in a honey mustard spread to make it more palatable to put down?
You don't have to eat it.
Well, I'm just asking for her sake.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, you can put, like, whatever you want on it, but you have to eat the whole thing.
Wait, no, I'm not eating the sock now. This is your sock.
You're the one who started asking about
I'm just saying if I can help her out. She's going to have to eat this sock if it turns out to be wrong, so I'm saying can we put a honey mustard spread on it?
You know, I might just, like, wrap it around, like, carrot sticks and dunk it in ranch dressing, you know, stuff like that.
Carrot stick? Why are you wasting some delicious ranch dressing on that?
I like the crunch.
I'd rather eat the sock than this carrot sticks. Ugh.
Let's move on to Boruto. Number 5, Momoshiki and Kenshiki. Last time, Boruto's secret was exposed. He was I really appreciate the bluntness with which this chapter opens up, where Naruto just announces... he explains, look, scientific ninja's tools were banned in this, because instead of using your own chakra, it defeats the purpose of nurturing new shinobi. He explains it, and then he's like, hey, Lee, disqualify him. And then he announces, yeah, he's disqualified. And then he takes off Boruto's headband and says, you're not worthy of being a ninja.
Ooh.
Damn! It's like, yeah, fuck you, kid!
Okay, this is terrible. I was so happy he did that, because...
I was so happy, too.
Oh, man!
This kind of moment needed to happen, you know, for him doing that, and because we find, like, oh, you know, he was banished, or he's a missing man, or whatever you want to call it. And of course he lashes out instead of just quietly going with them, because Naruto's like, come on, we have to get out of here, because the exam's still going, let's just get out of everyone's way, and I'm going to lecture you about this later. And Bo's like, what do you mean you're lecturing me later? Oh, you sure got the time, Dan, huh? Well, if you lectured me earlier, I wouldn't be in this situation now, is it? Fuck you, kid.
God.
That like, return argument's like, oh, just cementing, just hammering in, just that I can't stand you at all, kid.
Such a stupid goddamn brat. And, of course, what's his face? Katasuke, the scientist who gave Boruto the armlet and the pellets, is like, well, time to advertise this! Did you guys see how strong this guy was from cheating? Yeah, we can do all sorts of tricks! But then all of a sudden, the plot arrives.
Ding dong!
So the we got two enemies introduced. These Kaguya's descendants arrive. These are the Momoshiki and Kinshiki, and they start wreaking havoc. A bunch of the ninja have to start protecting people. Sarada actually ends up kind of being brought into the fray when she's basically trying to help some people in the stands, and stuff blows up, and so Sasuke ends up arriving on the scene and saving her. So the four of them, Sarada and Sasuke and Naruto and Boruto, are all in the arena with these two enemies. And so their fathers have to basically simultaneously try fighting them while protecting their kids. But fortunately, Shikamaru is also there! Yay! And he actually almost ends the battle before it begins by catching them both with his shadow paralysis technique, but the female-looking one of them demonstrates that they can absorb chakra. Dun-dun-dun. It's the androids!
Yeah, basically.
So, they demonstrate that, and then, what's it? I don't know which is named which. Oh well. Sasuke explains that we finished decoding the scroll, and I wanted to explain everything, but it's a warning about them to invading. They're after chakra fruit. In other words, they're after the Bijuu chakra inside of you, Naruto. Momoshiki, the littler one, holds up a pill, and Sasuke says, oh yeah, they have pills that are made from the chakra fruit, which can increase their power and extend their life. And so Momoshiki says, yes, and doping allows us to acquire more power by cheating, as with an armlet that can cast jutsus.
I just love Naruto's response to essentially like, drugs are bad! I'm like, is this gonna be the theme of Boruto? Just like, don't do drugs, hard work and effort! Or, as proven with Rock Lee, it doesn't matter if you work really hard. Eventually you're just gonna be crippled as fuck, but don't cheat.
Why can't you just have good genes like the rest of us who are the strongest? Why can't you just have the Bijuu chakra inside of you to begin with? Yeah, to make you
just use your legendary tailed beast chakra to overcome all challenges.
Yeah.
Or your legendary bloodline jutsus.
Momoshiki scarfs a bunch of the pills at once, and summons this huge ball of energy, starts getting ready to throw it down. Boruto's like, I've got to protect Sarada-chan!
Yeah, this was a bit
since weird. When the fuck are you stronger than her? Fucking since when?
I was really hoping that something would happen and, like, she would, like, scoop him up and, like, princess carry him off the battlefield or something.
Oh, my fucking hero. Let's go.
I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, good job.
Did they even really establish that he's got, like, a crush on her or something?
No. I mean, they're friends, I guess.
Yeah, I think they're just, like, childhood friend sort of things.
I mean, their parents get along with each other and go way back, so presumably they know each other, and, I mean, they have attended class together for their entire lives, I guess. But there's never really been an indication of how Boruto feels about Sarada. We've seen a lot of bits where Sarada is, you know, happy that Boruto was training, you see her in the stands when his secret is out, she's really disappointed in him. So, she's clearly very happy that they were gonna take on this exam together. But we've had almost all of Bolt's stuff has been about how he feels about his family. Because he gets along with his mom and his sister, but he doesn't get along with Naruto. He thinks that Sasuke is super cool because he's not his dad. But was his dad's rival. So yeah, there's been very little focus on how Boruto gets along with, like, his actual classmates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just a guilt thing, because he sees, you know, his classmate is there, and he's like, oh, this is kind of my fault that we're in this situation to begin with, so I'm going to make sure to protect her.
It might. It's just hard not to see the Naruto-Sakura side of things, the correlation there.
Yeah.
How creepy would that be? Now, listen, son. Sasuke beat me to Sarada's mom, but look, look, you can make things right.
Yeah, this is up to you. I'm living vicariously through you.
I lost my chance at it, but now my child can be together with Sasuke's child. What? I mean Sakura's child.
Yeah. Their names are so similar. It's understandable I'd mix them up. Anyway, you go bang the shit out of that Uchiha kid.
I mean that Haruno kid.
you know what I'm saying. Sharingan. Get the Sharingan.
I mean the super punchy. God damn it.
Just fuck him.
Her.
I said her. You heard her.
Anyway, the blast goes flying, starts getting ready to fly down, but Naruto kicks into action, uses his tailed beast, Super Sage, Ultra Biju, Mega Chakra mode to get ready to deflect it. Sasuke is also shipping his chakra in as well, getting ready for everything to go down. And I'm not sure exactly what the fuck happens. I really don't. Like, there's wind rushing and energy flying over, but the attack hasn't been thrown at them yet while this is all going on. What? I don't know what's happening.
No, like, it seems like an attack is, like, it's lightning off of the attack is...
Yeah,
I don't know.
Vortex? Is it a vortex that he summoned?
No, I think it's his sleeve that you're seeing that might be confusing you a bit, because he shoots lightning at them. Like, they're summoning up the Kyobi to be a shield.
He's preparing a huge attack while also throwing lightning down at
Yeah.
him.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, it looks like there's also a vortex there, like, in the one panel, but I think it's just his sleeve.
Yeah, I see that. Okay. So yeah, he's casting his arms around it and throwing smaller attacks while still preparing the big one.
Yeah.
He doesn't need both hands to summon the spirit bomb, that cheater.
Yeah, no. He's got access to the acid dimension, but he won't use that.
And then he finally does throw down the huge orb, and Naruto gets ready, and he says, Sasuke, take care of the kids. And Sasuke just goes, alright. At least emotional response to that. It's so weird.
Well, he's like, I hear there's this kid Yuno, and I gotta show him up. This is how you really do it, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he's, like, looking over to Naruto. There's a little moment where they kind of exchange glances. So, I don't know.
They do.
And Naruto gets ready to actually summon Kurama. In order to engage in battle as the chapter ends. I like parts of the chapter. I think I liked it a bit more than the last ones that we got. Mostly just for the satisfaction of ancient Boruto. You stupid little brat.
I love that Boruto summons that shadow clone, and then like 3 pages later, it's gone. Like, oh, good job, man, good job!
So I was like, thanks. I'm so wet.
You get a gold star.
I feel bad.
Gives him a participation ribbon.
I feel a little bad for him. But just a little bit. Like, sure, your dad's gone most of the time. But, like, God, you're such a little brat. Deal with it.
I can't. It's such a weird... I still just don't get why Naruto is that busy. Like, it feels so unbelievable to me that he's like, Barack Obama has time to do things. Like, is there no delegation of responsibilities in the ninja village?
Spoilers! He hates his son!
I get your point, like, because aside from Sasuke, like, Naruto's whole class is still there, and most of them are carrying out various duties. Rock Lee is conducting the exam. Konohamaru is teaching kids. Shino is a teacher there. All the women are raising kids.
Tan-Tan's owning a store, remember
that's
that?
That's true. The one who didn't get hooked up with anyone has to be a single woman who don't need no man.
Also no business.
Because her love interest died.
But also, Shikamaru is his advisor. He's, second in charge. So how is it that nothing else is getting done, apparently?
Like, and there's so other busy advisors that we've seen at various points who help out, too, yeah.
It's just like, I don't understand how you're not able to make
time for this. You could summon a million shadow clones who can all handle individual duties. Why doesn't Naruto be the one to spend time with his family, and the shadow clones do all of his work?
Like, I assume a lot of his work
is... It's not like they actually need him there. He's not fighting or, meeting with anyone important most of the time. He's just doing fucking paperwork.
Yeah, and it's not like it's Liar Liar or some one of those, 90s movies where it's like, oh, well, the dad's doing it because they're focusing so much on their job and business and, getting ahead that they forget their family. It seems like the country kind of runs itself at this point. I'm sure he's, trying to keep it as prosperous as it comes, but it's not like it's the cutthroat world of business. He's a, elected official, presumably essentially for life, unless he becomes a big fuck-up, so it's not like he should have to be that, if I rest for 1 second, that asshole Shikamaru's gonna take my spot.
Shikamaru's I don't want your job.
Fuck you, how dare you?
It's too troublesome.
He's like, I'm going to go spend time with my kids.
What? You could do that?
He's like, how do you find time? He's like, because it's a time of peace and it's not that busy. What are you doing? All right.
Fairy tale time.
Fairy tale chapter 501. Mari and Randy. Or Mary and Randy. I don't know exactly how you say that. Because it's Dee Maria. So I guess Mary and Randy. Whatever. Last time, Gray had, defeated Inville, but Luvia was super dead until she wasn't anymore, and they had also cut over to...
Could not have timed that joke more perfectly.
Yeah.
Bleach is over, Juvia's ended up coming back next week, Juvia's fine. It's like, yes!
But there was also a cut over to Natsu essentially standing up to Brandish and saying, we can be scary too, no matter what. So, this continues that, essentially, of him saying, if you intend to block our path, we'll fight you too. So Brandish is like, ugh, you're a pain. And Natsu doubles over in pain. And she's like, yeah, remember when I shrunk your magic cancer away? I just grew it right back for you.
Wait. I don't remember this magic cancer. I usually don't pay attention.
It wasn't cancer, it was a tumor.
It was a tumor that Natsu had developed of, bad energy, essentially, that was going to kill
bad
him.
Bad juju.
Yeah. And Brandish shrunk it down to the point where it was insignificant, because she has size-changing powers.
Yeah.
But I guess she didn't, she couldn't shrink it out of non-existence, so she just grew it back to the point where it's affecting Natsu again. So he's doubling over dying again.
Okay.
Yeah, it all makes sense. It all comes back. Don't worry, he's not going to have it too much longer, I'm sure. Because Brandish says he's a nuisance, a menace to my nation. And, Lucy's like, no, you can't do this, he's my friend, I don't really want to do this, I don't want to fight you. But, if I fight you and win, will you heal Natsu? And technically, Brandish's thighs say this line. Because it's drawn from a panel.
Call it what it is, Chris. Her camel toe says this.
Yeah, she's like, you're missing the point. I'm not challenging you to a fight. I'm saying I'm going to kill you right now so I will no longer be swayed by emotion. Because you don't even have the slightest chance of beating me. I don't know why Lucy's still like, just do it anyway, promise me. And, Brandish's like, fine, whatever. And they start fighting. And this is actually where the chapter gets kind of decent, because it's Lucy having a fight, which is usually pretty cool, because she doesn't get to do a lot of stuff. And she starts going through her different zodiac forms. A lot of the outfits are celestial dress, I think was the magic. Whatever. Well, she basically gets a new outfit and powers associated with her celestial spirits. So we see, her Scorpio outfit for the first time. And, how she's basically, riding into his dust tornado to strike at Brandish. Brandish shrinks her down, tries to start squeezing her, so she activates cancer form. She has these swords, and she's basically Wasp in the cartoons. She's just bing, 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 bing. And Brandish's like, oh, this is so annoying. Get big again. And while she's in midair from being big, she goes into Aquarius form, hits her with a Aqua Meteora, which I assume just means, like, aqua meteor, which sounds pretty awesome. Like, it's actually, like, a... It makes the... As Scorpio puts it, it's magic that makes the land flow in waves like the sea. And the Aqua Aquarius had basically granted that to her. Apparently, though, and this is sort of a weird aspect of Brandish's power, she compresses Lucy's magic down. So I guess she can also just shrink magic.
She can shrink literally anything, basically.
Yeah. So,
she shrinks her magic down into a ball and then throws it at Lucy and then grows it big after she's thrown it.
Yeah.
And she knows, it's actually fucking badass when you think about it.
Yeah. And she knows, like, you aren't in the same league as the 12. And I'm like, yeah, I guess so. Although there are a few members of the 12 that were kind of lame. But whatever. Happy's worrying because he's like, oh no, Natsu's dying. And, you know, Lucy, you know, makes her stand. She's like, I admit, you're a lot stronger than me, but I'm going to find some way to beat you. But to tell you the truth, I don't really want to fight you. I don't have a choice. This is to protect Natsu. And that's when Dee Maria shows up and she's like, enough of this bullshit. You know, Brandish has no intention of killing you. If you were, you wouldn't have just enlarged his tumor. You would have enlarged all of his organs and ruptured him from the inside and immediately killed him. And you could have just shrunk this girl down and stepped on her. Like, you're toying with them. And you wanted to make it appear like they had beaten you so that I would be convinced. But I don't fucking buy that bullshit. Dee Maria cuts Brandish right down. Just, I guess, stops time and just cuts her apart. And says to Lucy, are you the one who ruined my Randy? And then she steps on her head, and a little bit of a cheesecake is shot, and says, your death won't be so quick, little girl. Oh, it's a chapter.
Okay. If this whole thing ends with Lucy basically doing the same thing as she did this chapter and kicking Brandy's ass, then I'll... Not Brandy, Maria's ass. Then I'll be okay with this. But as is, it's kind of just like, Lucy's useless again. It's just like, oh, again.
It's such a shame because she was so cool fighting.
Yeah.
It is, but like, I can't, because we saw what Dee Maria could do, and she was absurd. She has time control powers. Like,
the only thing that could possibly happen is if some other time magic thing happens, or if she just gets caught off guard by something.
I mean, I guess she has... It's the one guy. She has the one celestial spirit. It's not one of her zodiac.
One that can protect her from magic
Horks,
effects.
Yeah, like Horks Major or something like that. If she hides inside him, maybe that allows her like bypass time stopping and she can interact with it. But it's tough when you present an opponent who, one, we've already seen get defeated, but two, like it's someone so strong. I guess she also has Gemini who can copy magic, so maybe she could copy the time stopping and then act within it.
Just enter into the same world as Dee Maria.
Yeah, it's just tough because it's an opponent with a very strong ability, so it's you know, it seems like there's got to be a very particular way you go against it, or you just don't have her do all the same crazy strong stuff she did before, so I don't know.
I mean, the obvious choice seems to be Brandish makes her choice, takes away the tumor cancer that Natsu's suffering from, and Natsu punches her in the face, and Fairy Tale wins. It's just like,
yep.
I'd be so infuriated.
I'm going to be a little angry if it happens, because just like this seems, because the whole thing with Brandish has been her relation to Lucy, so it feels like it should be Lucy to protect her and fully bring her onto their side. Because if it's Natsu again, it's just like, well, Natsu just be another person.
It's like Natsu.
I don't know. Natsu doesn't seem to fight the women, though, does he? Natsu doesn't fight girls, really.
Not particularly, no.
I don't know if that's going to happen. I did like this chapter for the most part. Because Lucy stands by her friend / love interest and is like, I don't care if you completely eclipse my power, I'm going to find a way to win. And then she gets completely serious. There's no cheesecakey shots for her during this whole stretch where she's going between her different forms and fighting. And she does some impressive stuff. But then Dee Maria shows up and is like, okay, look, she could kill you in the blink of an eye. this is ridiculous. See, I know what you're doing. You're putting on this show to try and make it seem like, oh, you fought and you got defeated, so you don't have to actually do it. But I know you too well. And so that's why she's pissed off about this. But it does seem like it's going to negate what moment we had from Lucy. And that worries me because Lucy never gets to do anything. So. Yeah.
Especially, I really like her Scorpio outfit. Like, that was, I think, the coolest of all of her star dresses I've seen thus far. Kind of has, like, a Mortal Kombat feel a little bit to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Ninja feel. Looks cool. Mm. I'd like to see more. I always thought she had one of the more interesting magics in Fairy Tale, too, because it had specific rules for how it applied, but you could continue to build upon it, like when she activated two gates for the first time, or when she first did the star magic, or as she acquired stronger spirits. Like, it just seems like something you could do a lot with, but Lucy tends to end up going up against a lot of fan service-y kind of opponents and things like that.
Prove me wrong, Hero. Prove me wrong, and have her do something.
He's like, no, I hear you loud and clear, Nick. Old Tyr will show up next chapter, and he'll stop De Maria again.
The one-time thing happens twice!
Loki, or Leo, gives his life to protect Lucy. I'm like, God damn it! So, yeah. That's the chapter.
Okay. Well, let's move on to Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, chapter 182. Let's see, what chapter was it? The Birth of the New Council, that was it. Last time we focused on Soma's efforts to try and find some way of perfecting his bear meat dish, and he decided to go with Kuga into the mountains to really acquaint himself with the ingredient. But a lot of this chapter doesn't focus on that. We get a little snippet of it in the middle, but a lot of it is a flashback, or a couple of flashbacks. So we start off with the meeting of the Council of Ten, after three of the members were kicked out. So it's just the six of them there, along with Azami. And Rindo is pouting, which I really like. And Suga says, can you just stop sulking? No, this sucks! But Azami then begins making an announcement by saying, we are searching for the best and brightest amongst the school, so that you too can join up as a member of the Council of Ten, working hand-in-hand with us in fun and friendship to guide the Totsugi Institute into the future. It seems so wrong for him to say the words fun and friendship. I like how he's
we
making
have parties. Parties. Parties? How do you say this word?
We can be a great TM. I like how they're all continuing to bicker while he's carrying on with this announcement, too. It's a nice little detail. Sword guy still isn't saying anything, though.
What do you think his food specialty will be?
It better be something that has to do with cutting meat, because... or cutting something, because he can't just carry a sword around just because.
I want him to carry that sword around just because, and his specialty is, like, very fine touches on things. You know, because it's this big
it's like a dessert specialist who's got to carefully craft.
Yeah, you know, he's all about the details.
Just carries a sword around and wears his hair in a mohawk and wears his jacket like that because everyone thinks he's a sissy if he doesn't.
Like, he's like a pastry dude. And he's just like, I just carry the sword because it looks cool. I make a lot of specialty pizzas. It's kind of my thing. I don't cut with the sword. That would be unhealthy.
Eventually, the council seems to settle down. They start to debate amongst themselves. Who do you think is actually, you know, going to actually make it through this and join us? And Rina says, oh, it's probably going to be, you know, the third years. It'll be really hard for the second years to beat them. Though it'd be different if Kuga or Ishiki were still around. But we cut away from that to the present, where Soma is out with their guide, who's this kind of middle-aged guy who's got a dog with him. And honestly, that's a nice looking dog. If it doesn't jump up on me and bark, I would let that dog be my pet.
You'd like Scotia, Nick.
I don't know.
You know, in Hokkaido, they have a a dog that they've trained to attack bears, and so that's what I'm assuming this is. They're trained to attack the neck.
Because this guy's a bear expert, and yeah, you spend enough time following bears around one's eventually going to get pissed off at you.
How can I make that my job, that I train the bear-killing dogs?
I'm putting a link in the chat there. Kaido can.
So, there was something that happens at this point that people actually linked us, saying, Chris, you're Kuga. What happens is, Kuga is not taking the cold very well. Soma's acclimated fairly well to it, but Kuga's there just like, so cold, I want tea with milk or chai. Well, we brought coffee with us. No! Not coffee! Piping hot tea with milk or chai!
I finished my chai latte a little bit earlier in my wire mug, so I do know what his feeling is like when you're like, I want more chai! What the fuck are you doing?
I like how he's just like, oh, I'm so cold right now, I need hot tea with milk or chai. Well, we've got hot coffee. No!
Slap it out of their hands. Did I say coffee?
I would rather freeze to death!
Did I fucking stutter when I said tea with milk or chai? No!
I made extra effort to not stutter from the freezing cold! Oh, you hipster.
Hey! I get cold and I like chai. What do you want me to do, Nick?
Someone draw Kuga wearing horn-rimmed glasses and a scarf for us.
And a very silly mustache.
Terrible facial hair. And a beret.
Listening to Mumford and Sons.
I will wait for chai. Yeah, so Kuga speaks a bit with Soma about stuff. And Soma asks him, hey, so tell me about, you know, that free-for-all battle where they decide the three empty seats at the council. And Kuga says, yeah, I guess that was a few weeks ago. They held it around the same time as the mop-up Shokugeki. The participants were all shifts that Izami and Akiri had personally chosen to become part of Central. A once-in-a-lifetime chance for them to get on the council. If I take a part, we won the whole thing hands down, right? Of course I'm right! And all of his followers are like, yes, sir! You totally are great! My favorite part, though, is the follow-up for the tracker is like, be quiet or you'll scare away the bear. Yes, sir. But he kind of continues the flashback from there. And he says, yeah, Akira Hayama was one of those chosen. And like you'd expect, you know, the third years who stood out the most from the beginning. And actually we see that, Rentaro got his ass handed to him by some of the third years. In fact, all of the second years they were part of Central were handily defeated.
I don't know why I'm so amused by the effect that not only did they lose, they apparently lost so hard it like knocked the, it like rendered them unconscious. Like, cause you just see these, the other three members like passed out like one, it like someone like said like, my food's better. Bam. And they just socked them in the face afterwards. Like that's what you get when you lose.
Oh man. Yeah, they got their asses handed to them. And so we get this, like, brief little shot of like, oh, these four third years are super powerful, too. And we've got our own Hulk guy among them. I like how there's this guy who's like a Kurokiba ripoff. There's someone who's got the Gendo glasses going. And there's this girl who's got, like, she's, like, made out to be, like, a fucking Asian vampire.
Oh, I hope her gimmick is rice, and every time she makes some, she has to count every grain.
God damn it!
She never gets her dishes
out of time again!
She never gets them in on time. I don't know why she keeps including rice in her dishes.
Or, like, she manages to hold it together right up until it's presentation time, and she has to explain, it's like, I have made for you a rice dish with special soy sauce and...
Fuck.
1, 2, 3... Be more careful when you're tasting the dish next time, please! So the big guy among them happens to see Hayama brooding over in the corner, like he doing the most stereotypical leaning with one foot in front of the other. And he's like, oh, are you just going to watch us to the very end, Akira Hayama? And he's like, what, me? Oh, sorry, I kind of zoned out. I was thinking about something more important. Yeah. Yeah, I'll be your opponent. And this is one of the coolest yet stupidest moments that we've gotten Shokugeki no Soma yet, where it's like he's cast his finishing move on them, and he's doing the follow-through from it, because he's got his arms crossed over them with vials of his spices held between his fingers and his hair blowing out past him as an explosion of spice has gone off in the background, and all of them are in poses of ecstasy with their clothes flying off as they're blown away by the explosion.
It's so great and terrible. Oh, I don't know.
But yeah, Hayama joined the Council of Ten along with some girl who looks like, or I guess it's a girl, it could be a guy.
Duo Maxwell from Gundam Wing.
A little bit like Duo Maxwell. I was actually going to go for, like, McDonald's employee. Japanese on the point with the cap and the shirt and stuff.
Oh my god, and this burger's amazing!
And then there's someone who is that. I can't tell if it's their hair or a chef's hat made to.
It's a chef's hat.
Chef's hat, but it almost looks like their hair was modeled into a chef's hat style.
It's because the way
their hair is like. Not parted, but is sectioned. It blends almost perfectly into the chef's hat's folds. But then we finish up with a flashback with Kuga wrapping up his tail. And look, he's got stupid facial hair.
Oh,
so
he started it, yeah. He's got it curled up.
Yeah. I like how he's making this. It's like he's an older man telling this grand tale, and someone's like, how are you even making that face?
After the carnage, one of the defeated third years. Oh.
It's like, how are you
long ago in a distant land.
I, Kuga, the super awesome head of the Chinese Food Association, unleashed an unspeakable food cart. But the foolish first year, wielding a meat bun sword, stepped forth to oppose me. I worked a little too well. Anyway, we actually go back into the flashback briefly just so one of the third years could be like, oh shit, that's some good food, yo. Just continuing to emphasize the point that Hayama has also evolved from the last time we saw him. Probably has evolved more than even Soma has, at least as far as anyone observing them can tell. And the Kuga Press was like, yeah, you tasted what Hayama's dish during the classic finals. Yeah. You're going up against something completely different. In fact, he's so badass, it looks like he's got a single black wing coming out of him when we next imagine him. I guess that's supposed to be the power of Central and Azami at his back, but it looks like he's a one-winged angel, seriously.
I just replayed Final Fantasy VII, guys.
It's weird. Houses attack you.
And I like how someone then says, what, so you're saying I don't stand a chance against him? And Kuga's immediately like, no, what's with this negativity, Soma? No, I don't want to hear any of that crap from you. He's like, no, you were the one who... Kuga does say, yeah, I agree with your point that just trying to get rid of the bear meat smell is not going to work. You need to fully understand the characteristics of the ingredient and then tackle the dish from a different direction. After all, it's obvious Hayama will make that quirky stink and easily turn into some kind of sublime and seductive aroma which will utterly bewitch anyone who smells it. Soma knocks his head into a tree behind him as he's kind of leaning back and thus ends up having snow fall on him. It's a weird little moment. But he explains himself by saying, like, yeah, I got distracted by something up in the tree. And he's like, this might be the answer that we're looking for. So someone appears to have stumbled across potentially his secret ingredient. But we'll see how things go.
What inspiration do you think he got from this?
I can't say because I've seen spoilers for the next chapter already.
Lisa? Also seen spoilers for next chapter.
I want to say, and this is kind of a shot in the dark, it's something to do with the, maybe it's a pine tree or something, and so it'll be the pine scent, or maybe he'll smoke, I don't know.
I think it's not the tree itself, I think it's the action of something, the snow falling from the tree.
What I'll do? What? I'll drop a bunch of snow in his dish to ruin it. I'll smash his fingers between two pots, of course.
I know what I'll do. I'll cheat!
How did snow remind you of that? Don't question my inspirations. Now have the squid with butter.
Out in the snow the night before.
Yeah, it's like...
It's awfully cold here. Same if he were to lose his fingers to frostbite.
I know what I'll do. I'll bury Hayama's house in snow!
I'll kidnap June and take her to the frozen wasteland!
I'm just thinking, like, we've seen Soma's gimmick... You know, honestly, it's almost kind of become a style to make, like, changing dishes. Where, like, you open something and something comes out. I feel like this is him being like, oh, I could drop something onto the bear meat and change it. Maybe it will be snow directly or something like that, but I feel like dropping something will be... relevant.
I guess we'll see.
It's like, God, you're so ugly and wrong.
My Hero Academia? Don't put words in my mouth, Chris.
Okay.
Fuck you.
Yes, sir.
My Hero Academia, just a brief little note, character popularity poll.
Yes! And
we get to vote on it this time. Yay!
Huzzah!
Yay!
You go on Viz.com, there is a My Hero Academia. It's the address that they list is just a shorthand one to redirect you to the main page, which is viz.com/my-fave-hero. But yeah, if you go out there, you can vote for your favorite character.
You mean you can all vote for Aizawa?
You can all vote for your favorite character. Even if you don't have a Shonen Jump subscription, you can go on there and you can vote for your favorite characters. That's cool.
Yeah. Do we feel like we should push for anybody, Nick?
Well, I voted for Bakugo, but that's me being true to myself. Just like that's my favorite character. But if I had to pick one that's like, okay, come on, guys, let's get this character some votes, it would have to be Jiro.
It's like, come on, that's on you. I voted for Jiro.
Get this character some recognition, you know?
Yeah, I say if you're listening and you haven't voted yet, and you know, assuming you like Jiro. Let's make a push. You know how last time Asui was like number two?
Mm-hmm.
And it was because of all the furry people? I want to be Jiro is number two.
Reach out to all those ear jack fetishes out there.
Exactly. It's got to be a fetish out there. I'm sure they're out there. But in general,
they call themselves audiophiles, which makes all the real audiophiles be like, oh man, I wish that our hobby was less expensive.
But yeah, I think it'd be cool if like, we made a push and she had like a big showing. So, that'd be cool.
I also like the celebratory two-page spread that we get with Aizawa and All Might with all the 1A students in, like, fancy dress attire.
Yes. I like the image after that, too. I think it's the one they already used it, but it's when you have All Might or Deku and the Heroes.
Oh, the Heroes versus the Lens two-page spread.
Yeah, yeah. They've used it before, but I don't know if it was in color before. But it's a really great image.
I think it was in color.
Yeah, I think it was a spread earlier. Yeah.
It is an awesome image nonetheless, though.
Oh, it's so cool.
Some of my favorite little tidbits from the two-page spread. Almost all the guys look fucking stupid. Except for Todoroki, who looks like a boss. It's like, no, fuck your weird polka-dotted ties and all this bullshit. Black suit, white shirt, blue tie. There. Fuck your
boss. Hey, man, Tokoyami's looking pretty good there.
You can tell he's just like, I must envelop myself in black.
I couldn't find a black shirt in time, so this white one will have to do.
Aizawa's rocking pink pants. I feel like he's leading the students down a bad path already.
Oh, he's so great.
All Might with his yellow suit.
That's just perfect for him.
And Deku being like, oh, I see. The suit must be the same color as your hair. No. Why are you wearing your same gloves and shoes with this suit? Doesn't match at all. That said, though, I think that Asui actually looks cute. And I like the detail of Jiro dressing more masculinely than all the other girls still. She's wearing, like, a fucking leather jacket with whatever else is under it. Cool image, though. And I like the dynamic sort of it, though. Yes. I hear Candy has, like, the best color page, I swear. Anyway, let's get back in the action. The hero license exam continues. I like the way that things are breaking down with, there are 203 disqualified students, but 50 qualified students, which means that aside it's such a weird name, Yorashi, taking out a fucking ton of people, it seems like most of them have just been taking out single targets to this point. The first of the one I assume that we see has been confirmed to pass is, Todoroki. Not too big a surprise. But he notes to himself that he's, you know, this, he still has a long ways to go because he still can't use, his fire and ice power simultaneously, so he needs more training. So he makes his way into the, anteroom, the reception room. Where he spots Yorashi immediately because, you know, he's talking loudly, of course. But there's a...
Against some guy who's clearly trapped in the conversation and doesn't want to be there. Because I was like...
See, like, his face at all except for, like, his one eye. And he's like, please stop talking.
So he just comes back. He's like, what was I saying? Dude's like, I don't know, dude. You were talking to me.
But there's an interesting little moment where Yorashi, you know, he's enthusiastic. He's like, oh, yeah, I love STEM. He's so awesome. And Todoroki, is, you know, takes a seat. And Yorashi very obviously spots him and suddenly gets a very serious look on his face. And he goes, oh, what are you talking about? And so continuing the idea of a connection between Todoroki and Yorashi, which might be something beyond just, oh, they were both, you know, really heavily scouted and recommended students. Back inside the test chamber, we have the unnamed Senketsu girl who could disguise herself, continuing to fight with Deku, who immediately gets very flustered because she ain't wearing clothes. Yeah. She could try her body. She doesn't need to actually wear clothes, so... But she goes after him up until...
I'm wondering if she actually is out of her clothes or she's just disguised herself as appearing to be naked.
Maybe.
Wouldn't it be kind of fucked up with the rules if it's just like, you have to make sure that the, you know...
the targets are obvious.
Yeah, are visible. And she's like, all right, well, I'll just make them obvious and I'll discard my fucking clothes and meet some rock somewhere.
It's like that because I can't see her targets anywhere.
Well, it might be that she's just covering them up with her... magic, or she's put, like, maybe they're on her back. I don't think we see any images from her, like, behind.
Well, we see her just fucking naked without any flowy bits in a very, you know...
Yeah, but I mean, we don't actually see her back.
Carefully arranged pose. And yeah, you're right, there's nothing on her back, but I'm saying, like, there's nothing distorting her body at that bit, and you still don't see any targets. So, yeah. So I don't know. I think that she... would like that to be kept a secret, given her general personality, so whatever. Fortunately, a hero arrives! The one that Class 1A can always count on in a bind! Cero!
Tape dude!
The guy who fell to the victimization of boobs when Mineta didn't!
You know what? This is what I really love about My Hero, though, is that every so often they just interchange a new Class A hero into kind of, like, the group. Like, it's now Shero's time to kind of be, like, in the quasi-spotlight.
Like
I like Cero!
Like when Kirishima got a chance to shine in the last arc by going along with Ida and...
Yeah, or Shiro when he got his chance to shine at the end of this camp arc. And
yeah.
Yeah, they usually just incorporate one or two new kind of side characters and give them a little bit of a chance to make an impact.
They're all trying to be heroes, so. Uraka also dashes onto the scene, demonstrating some of her martial arts capabilities to drive off the Shiketsu students. And Shiketsu girl's like, yeah, I kind of wanted to talk with you a bit more, but oh well. Bye. And she also observes, like, oh, by the way, you know, Uraraka, he really does trust you. And then, beep, bop, she vanishes. Uraraka's only defining character trait is that she's in love with Deku. Deep, 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 deep.
Well, I thought it was kind of a fun trait when they had before that because of her training with, astronaut guy or whatever. So that because she was trained by such a battle-hardened expert, she had issues where she just became, like, focused on battle all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a fun trait that I think they're kind of trying to show here, but I like it if they made that more of, like, a comedic trait. Gunhead. I thought that'd be kind of cool if they made that more, like, when battle comes up, like, even though it's not completely like her character, she just gets, like, in a battle mode.
Deku then notes, because he tells Uraraka and Sarah not to go after her, like, she managed to strip away her clothes, targets included, which must have something to do with her quirk. So, if she might come after us again, but we can't score any points off of her. So, there's no point with us trying to actually pursue her and fight her. And then he goes to him and is like, you two are actually you, right? Fool me once! but they managed to group up, which is good. But then they hear an announcement. It's like, okay, 58 people have passed. There's only 42 to go. And they're like, oh, we should actually pick things up and try to pass this exam then. And Deku kind of takes charge of things. He says, like, I know we're being targeted, but we have to do something about the group that's trying to track us down. So he starts talking things over. But he basically says, okay, you know, whenever they actually have us on the ropes, they kind of get in each other's way. Each of them is trying to secure a kill because although they might be trying to take us down, they're also trying to pass. So when there's a mob fighting against us, then we might actually be able to turn that against them. So then he also breaks down, okay, we've also got these targets to do. And it makes it seem like it's about aiming and throwing because we've got these balls that go after the targets. But what if we were able to actually just incapacitate some people and then just tap them with the ball for point blank range? We should be able to pull that off with our combination of quirks. So B starts to make a plan with them, he says, you know, I'll be the bait. You two look for openings, capture as many of them as you can. Your quirks are both suited to meaning opposing, you know, mobility. So let's do it. And then Uraraka has a my only character trait that I love Deku moment. So I don't know if we talked about the poll that we were told about last week, the least favorite female characters in Jump ever poll that Uraraka won. I personally took that as a sign that My Hero Academia is just really popular right now.
Yeah.
The adults who read it are annoyed by Uraraka. So.
You couldn't tell me that Uraraka is the worst female character in a Jump series. That's ridiculous. There's
history, no less.
they also had listed, I don't remember what place she was at, but Chika was on it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you back off. Like, Uraraka's awesome. I like her a lot. Like, no.
Little
leave my children out of this.
To note, this was not a Jump poll. This wasn't anything official. It's a fan site did it, essentially.
It was like 500 men and 500 women or something like that.
Which is not a really big sample size, to be even completely honest. So, what the real takeaway from it is that clearly there is a bit of a dislike going towards Uraraka that has to play, at least in some small part, to the fact that My Hero has become extremely popular. But it is something that I do hope Horikoshi gets back to focusing on Uraraka in a way that isn't just what's been kind of getting the most focus recently, which is her crush on Deku. Like, we've seen her have cool moments beyond that. You know, her fight with Bakugo, her training with Gunhead. Like, these are things that we can go back to that make her a more compelling character, and then you can go back to her being love interest for Deku. That's fine. Just, it'd be nice to get a little variety.
Yeah.
So, we now cut over to Bakugo's group.
This is fucked up.
This is amazing.
This is some weird, fucked up shit.
So, Kirishima, of course, ran after Bakugo, and we established because Kaminari is actually the one who we first see. He's like, oh man, I should have stuck with Midoriya, but then you guys ran off on a fall because I didn't want to be alone. And Baku's like, well then go away. Well, what am I supposed to, you saw Kirishima, you saw what happened to him. And they're facing down another Shiketsu student who, I should note, his targets are arranged like buttons on a uniform. Just fucking.
Well, I didn't notice that.
Wow. And he's holding Kirishima in one hand.
As a potato.
He's, not looking so good right now. He's alive, clearly.
Yeah.
But
because I think they'd be pretty fucked up if there was a dude just fucking mangling and killing students in the course.
Done it to a bunch of students there, too. He's like, we students of Shiketsu feels our duty to wear these caps during any and all public events. Why? Because our every action reflects on the legacy of Shiketsu High School. This is a demonstration meant to show the sheer difference between us, who cultivate that sense of duty and pride, especially in a public setting, and the rest of you, a mere mob of roughnecks who think you have what it takes to be heroes.
Wait, so like, oh yeah, look, this is... You know, I'm reflecting back on my school by making potato children.
With horrified mouths, too.
Yeah.
It's kind of, there's a stand in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 4 that, like, when you shoot someone, it, like, starts bubbling up their flesh and just turns them into, like, a dying hunk of flesh and bodies, like, that just meld together if you kill several people at once with it. Oh. It's fucked up. And, like, when I see that here, my mind can't separate it from that, because it feels so similar of just, like a mass of flesh with body parts, like, kind of focused on it. And I'm like, oh my god, he's killing these people! And I'm like, I mean, I guess it's just his way of incapacitating people, like, it's no different.
That's gonna be traumatizing, though.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's no different.
I have no mouth, and I'm a scream.
Well, they have a mouth, all they can do is scream, I think, but I...
Oh, one of them has a mouth, I don't think that all of them do.
Yeah, but it's just that notion of, like, I, you know, like, you can incapacitate people, like, there's the Miss Joker, who's like, I make people laugh and get them from that way. It's just like, this is a very unique kind of heroic power. I turn my villains into horrible blobs of flesh that I restore later, but for the moment, they're restrained.
It seems to actually have a drawback in this competition, though, because it looks like in doing this, he's actually covered up their targets.
Yeah.
So
maybe he has to just get lucky. Like, he picks one up, he's like, dang it.
Ah, no, like, god damn it. But, Kaminari takes in this whole speech and is like, what, what's he talking about? And Baku's like, I don't really know. It's kind of hard to tell with all those, with those squinty eyes of his. And he goes, my eyes are big and handsome! What a weird complex to have. The guy summons these weird finger-looking things from his back, which start to float through the air, and he starts to launch them towards Bakugo. And then we cut over to Ms. Joke and Aizawa. They're talking about stuff, and she's like, yeah, so are you getting worried about your students? And Aizawa launches into this little speech. You know, when it comes to Class A, one thing becomes obvious after watching them long enough. They probably haven't realized themselves yet, but the class revolves around a certain pair. It's not that they bring everyone together or serve as pillars or anything like that. In fact, they don't get along. But at one point or another, they infected the rest of the class with their passion and fervor. It's odd, but at least one of them is sure to be at the heart of every storm. So no, Joke, I'm not worried. I'm expecting big things. The very presence of those two raises the bar for the entire class. And we get this two-page spread as he says this. On one side, we have Deku leading the charge with Sero and Uraraka as they fight off a bunch of students. Seem to be having success. And on the other, we have Bakugo blowing away Finger Guy's fingers, with a burst of explosions.
I love that. I thought that was a really cool end to the chapter. And I do like how we are starting to see that the two of them are kind of growing up into leaders, or at least people that others follow around on. Because, we, you know, we've already seen that Deku has the people, like, his friends. But, like, we've started to see Bakugo and Kirishima have a very strong friendship. And maybe Kirishima falls into that as well. Like, people just look at Bakugo and, like, I follow you because I didn't want to be alone. But clearly people look to Bakugo in somewhat of a similar way they look to Deku. So I thought that was a really cool way to kind of show off both of those.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's also nice to see that Bakugo is clearly a bit resentful of a lot of stuff that's gone on, but somehow, despite that, he also seems like he's come out a bit for the better from his being abducted. Even with, you know, his being awkward around All Might, even with Deku saving him again, and even though he's still like, fuck off, leave me alone, I'm going off on my own and go fight people. It's not like he, you know, is like, oh, you're here, Kamina, alright, I'll just pass by, boop, 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 booping you. So, it seems like he's a little bit less selfish than he was before that instance. So,
yeah,
a little bit of baby steps forward, basically.
I'm really excited for where this arc's going to go, because I'm really excited to see the character development it seems like we're going to get out of some big characters like Bakugo, Tokoyami, Todoroki.
We don't have One Piece this week, unfortunately.
Teardrop.
So we're just going to head on straight to The Promised Neverland, Chapter 6, Carol and Crone, with a really cool little title page of the three main kids being held in a wine glass.
Oh, it's so neat. It's creepy.
So last time, after being distracted by chores, given the...
Nick, that monster has 6 fingers!
I just noticed that, too! I was like, is that another finger down there?
Those freaky monsters!
There's a little kid that's been added to the orphanage named Carol, and also a new adult, another minion of the demons named Crone. So our three heroes are like, well, shit. I've got someone else who can keep an eye on us. It's going to be even more difficult to move around and even more difficult to get everyone to escape. And they even realize, oh, and she's going to be staying in the vacant room that we just cleaned.
Wow.
we were here preparing for our new enemy to move in. Norman is taking it really hard. He's like, oh my god, I can't believe that I overlooked this. I should have been able to see this. I should have seen this coming. And Ray's like, well, even if we knew about it, we couldn't have possibly prevented it. And Norman's like, no, it doesn't matter. You know, she was deliberately dangling clues in front of us. If it was just to take us by surprise, she wouldn't have made us do those chores. I should have been able to read her moves, so she outmaneuvered me. It's nice to see, you know, more personality from these kids shining through, because to this point, you know, the only thing that we've seen about Norman is that he's the midway point between them. It's nice to see, like, this kind of flash of pride and burden that he takes on himself. But he basically points out, okay, you know, look, this is, you know, a sign. Like, our opponent is Mom, and she outmaneuvered us in this case, so this is a bad sign. But Ray is like, okay, look, maybe she's trying to make us feel depressed by this demonstration, by, you know, demonstrating, oh, I'm better at strategy than you. You know, I can see through, you should just give up. So if she was dangling hints in front of us, that's what she wanted to show off. So we can't let this get us down. And anyway, we should be happy about this development because we have more sources of information now. We can use this development and turn it to our advantage. We'll win this in the end. Playtime happens and they go off in order to strategize some more. And Norrin's like, okay, well, Carol's replacing Connie. And it was like, yeah, where did they come from? And Ray says, well, if this place is a farm and not an orphanage, that means that there must be a base where they have newborns, where they either created them or kidnapped them in order to replenish the farm, in order to grow into their eventual food source. And that's probably where we came from. And Norman's also like, yeah, and if there is an adult other than Mom helping them out, that means that there might be other farms, like this one. I like how the more we learn about the world is just them theorizing stuff. Because they don't know. They're just kind of spitballing about all this stuff. And they're like, well, this could mean this. This could mean this.
And we still don't exactly know how close our reality is to theirs. Like, we're starting to find out, like, oh, it does take place in our Earth. It does take place in 2015. Like, you know, it's interesting to see as they discover these things how close it is to our world. I also really like that, you know, in this situation, because all the kids are kind of upset that they got beat, but I really like that Ray is like, why don't, like, instead of getting upset, let's look at what we've learned that's new about this information. Like, he takes what is a shitty situation, keeps his calm, and actually is like, let's see what we now can utilize from this. Like, how we can learn from it. I think that was a really cool trait for him.
It's that, you know, pragmatic side to him that we got, that no-nonsense approach that we saw when he was first brought into the fold, where he was like, there's no way this is going to work. The three of us should just try and make a break for it ourselves. The no-nonsense approach means that he's not getting emotional about things, whether positive or negative. He's just looking at things objectively. And you get the sense that if they hadn't brought him in, then they wouldn't be able to make it through this. He's, like, essential to their group. And he breaks things down very simply by saying, okay, there's another adult here. They're the keys to finding out about the outside. There's a new kid here who is young enough that maybe if there is a tracking device, maybe she'll still have a scar that we could discover, and maybe we can have a clue from that, get a clue from that. And thirdly, there's something wrong with the way that Mama's going about this. And I like the reactions to this, because Norman just kind of nods simply, and it was like, what? What? What are you talking about? And he explains, like, okay, well, she showed us these things on purpose to make us nervous with the tracking device. Again, this time, clearly something is going on. If she already knows, why doesn't she just find us, ship us out immediately? That's all she has to do. Why is she even bothering with keeping us here? She could just immediately track us down, get rid of the problem immediately. So there's a reason why she's not doing that. What reason could that be? And they don't even have any ideas about that. We actually find out the reason later on, in a sense. Emma says that she'll take care of trying to find out about Carol. I guess she's the only one who can get close to her for some reason. I don't know exactly why.
It might also be because Emma's the most emotional one, that she has the best chance of really, like, making it not obvious that she's up to something.
She seems to get along with they establish when they go off into the woods that the little kids want to play with her specifically. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's just that she gets along with all the kids the best, and so it's the least strange for her to check out the kid.
Yeah.
And yeah, Emma vows to herself, yeah, well, we're all going to get out of here. I'm not going to lose to the demons, not to the adults. As we cut over to the adults, and there's a little bit of a tension between Crone and Mom, and she's really kind of like telling Crone, like, yeah, you know your place. Like, you're here as my assistant, and I didn't request you specifically to be here, so don't go trying to butter me up by being like, oh, it's an honor and stuff like that. Because she actually knows specifically, it's like, yeah, you know, but I know who you are. You're the youngest ever to be chosen as head caretaker. You've raised the most high-quality goods out of all the houses. And she's like, I don't care. Let's just get to work. And she lays out all these documents. You know, this is the... I like the way she phrases it, which is, here is the information on my adorable children. Memorize it.
There's also an interesting note that I like brought in with Crone, where she says, I was finally able to come back to this side.
Yeah.
Implying, like, what is on the other side of the wall?
And Crone asks, like, you know, I'm grateful for this, but why am I here? What was I called in for? And she explains, the two kids found the secret. They saw the truck. And she's like, well, then according to the rules, we have to find them and ship them out immediately. And she's like, no. It's fine. I have an idea who the targets are. We just have to make sure they don't escape before shipment. My children here are special, and this is beneficial for the farm. And so Crone's like, so we're not reporting it. No. You're a guard. Be a guard without questioning me. I am the mistress of the house. You're my assistant. You'll have appropriate authority, but you will obey my instructions. Understand? And Crone says, yes, ma'am, Isabella. So we've learned Mom's real name, and I like that we get a little bit of stuff from her perspective on things. We got a bit of it with the demons, where she was talking with the demons earlier, too. But, you know, a little bit of her perspective without giving away too many secrets. So, that, you know, it's still a surprise whenever the kids find out something.
I like that we learned pretty quickly that Crone is not a demon. Mm-hmm. But she is indeed a human.
Who took tests. Just
who
like
took tests, so.
Isabella did. Got perfect scores every morning, according to what Isabella says. So, maybe if you get perfect scores, you don't just get eaten.
I've liked the series in general, but I think this is where the chapter that's really gotten me to, like, start getting really excited for the next week chapter. Like, I'm starting to really get invested in this. And I think it was on the Jump podcast they mentioned that next chapter should be a pretty big one because it's going to be the chapter for the end of a volume, which they usually try to make it a big thing. So
to convince you about the next one, sure.
Yeah, I'm gonna be really curious to see what happens next week. There's a lot of interesting dynamics going on here, and I'm curious to see once things start to really pick up and the tension between like the kids and the adults starts to ramp up.
Well, I guess we'll talk a little bit about Red Sprite then. Our final chapter of our last jumpstart. They're going to go and find Skypiea. Essentially, we learn in this chapter that one of the things that the kids learned about was Magonia, this island, this floating island in the sky. Which the teacher is like, what? No, of course it doesn't. I mean, yes! I'm sure it exists. It's a place you could all live freely together. Yes! So, this basically is Tatsu's plan. He's going to gather his friends together. He's going to establish an independent nation on Magonia with all of his friends and the people who will go with him. And he declares as such for all the world to see, because he hijacks the broadcast for the ceremony, appears in front of everyone, does out a microphone, and says, this is my declaration of war. We are going to become the aerial nation of Magonia, an independent country for human plasmeros and ruled by human plasmeros. And that he manages to get at least part of his message out before they cut the broadcast. What's his face? Gender ambiguous kid.
Mono.
Is like, oh, I understand what he's trying to do. We don't know where all of our friends are right now, but this is a message to the others.
I love this page.
It's a cool split screen because we see that like one of them has like an artificial arm. One of them is confined to a wheelchair. One of them's chained up. One of them apparently is just wandering the wilderness on his own.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Like, that's... I think it's what, again, it's what I love about, like, the getting the gang back together, like, trying to find a certain number or something. All of them look like they're in very different situations.
Yeah.
And after Tatsu makes this declaration, he says, come and follow the red lightning, and he vanishes in a flash as the projectile retrieval of the ship succeeds. Magic lightning everywhere. Yay! the crew that they have gathered essentially agreed to go with them, and they are all okay with Tatsu being their leader. There was a little bit of tension early on in the chapter from a couple of the people being like, what's that asshole idiot doing down there? Is he just going to try and go kill himself in the coolest way possible? But after he did that, they're like, okay, maybe this guy might have a bit of a plan. So, that's basically the rest of the chapter.
I mean, they also note, like, oh, wait, why, if you were down there and all the top brass were there, why didn't you kill him? He's like, well, I think maybe I went down there thinking I was the strongest person there, but all the generals on that stage, they were able to follow every move I made, so... Yeah, looks like this is going to be even harder than I expected. And he's excited about that. He's like, isn't that exciting? The electricity surges through his hand. It's a decent chapter. Again, I like the big announcement, like kind of teasing like all the different friends of his and the situations they're in. I did find it a bit odd. It felt like the artwork took a little bit of a dip towards the end. A lot of like blank backgrounds, but I don't know if that means anything or anything like that. I still like this chapter. I don't know if we're going to get any more. I would love to see more, but I can certainly understand if we don't. But I liked Red Sprite. I think it was a joy just to get these three chapters and nothing else.
I am a big fan of the author's previous work, Iron Knight.
So I'm
really excited about Red Sprite. I can't say I like it as much as Iron Knight.
Well, it's hard to be as on board for he has electricity powers as it was for he turns into an iron demon with fire powers who can make his own weapons from his metal scales, which he forges.
So when this series started, the translator, a translator, Stephen Paul, who translates One Piece, and he's amazing, had mentioned, you know, like, oh yeah, you know, like, this is by the same guy that did Iron Knight, you know, so I'm really excited about it, because I enjoyed Iron Knight, and I was like, oh wow, like, I'm finding other Iron Knight fans, is so cool, and he said, yeah, it was one of the few times when I was like, what are you doing, Japan? Why did you cancel this? What's your problem? Yes!
Yeah. That was one of the series I covered in video that I did talking about, oh, this was, you know, all the new manga that happened in Jump. This is the stuff that got canceled already and so on. And Iron Knight was one of the ones that I was pretty excited about, but it was only about 5 chapters old when I did that video. And then it got canceled and I was like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah, it's a... It was good.
It was also weirdly timed because it came out... What was the name of the other one? It happened, like, right around the same time as another
series. Metallicus?
No. I'll look it up while I'm trying to find this stuff. It was because it was another series with, like, the same premise of Japan is taken over by demons that have lived among them the entire time, and one of them will have to take on this demonic-looking form in order to fight against them, blah, blah, blah. And it was like they debuted within like a month of each other or something like that.
I don't know which one that would be off the top of my head.
While
you're doing that, I'll move us ahead and go into Toriko.
Okay.
Toriko, chapter 386, The Most Sinister Enemy, Akashia. So, last time. Froge
Hachi
super killed.
Hachi.
Yeah, I read Hachi. Huh. I didn't like it as I like that mangaka's works a lot, but they're really getting really weird in my opinion. I mean Hachi was weird. Boke-san was weird. Mushio and Roji was weird. But they're good. It's just I thought Iron Knight was better. They both got canceled, though.
Toriko, yes. Gourmet 3 Day 6, yes.
So last time, Froge was basically killed by Midoriya. Killed by Midora.
Deku got so powerful that he went to 3 dimensions.
But before he can actually be completely eliminated, Akashia basically knocks him. And I guess keeps him alive. He's like, don't move a muscle and wait there. So, Midora's like stepping in. He's like, don't worry, I'll help you guys out. And they're like, so, Neo's capture level was 22,000. And Akashia was 8,000. Which means Akashia's capture level right now with Neo is 30,000. Which is insane. Like, the kings themselves were like
Vegeta. What does the scouter say about his power level?
But like even God was I think 20,000 or something like that. So it's meant to be like this is a big deal. Like this is the biggest number we've seen. But Starjune's just like, well, whatever. There's always food luck. So essentially, the three of them are gonna
And Midora says, "My hunger always breaks limits."
Which I love because he says that, and Akashia immediately like steps up to them, and you can see a little bit of Toriko and Starjune are like, hmm. But Midora just never changes his face. It's always just like, do something. It's just that blank expression. It just does not give a fuck.
Do something so I can talk about how much I love Froze.
But it's kind of cool because they basically make these big attacks. So it's like, Star June saw a snippet of the future, so he dodged the attack first. And because he dodged that, Acacia made a different attack. But that smooth course and change was slowed down by Midora's Minority World. And that one split second of change was enough that Toriko was able to attack and deal damage. So it's like a...
with his infinity spike punch.
It's pretty awesome of just seeing like the combinations that they're doing, these huge attacks. I'd be lying to say I was able to follow all the action in this chapter, but I'd also be lying to not if I said that it wasn't the most fucking awesome shit ever, just seeing it and be like, I don't know what's happening, but this is super cool!
Well, like, Acacia launches a barrage of attacks, and so instinctively Midora goes, Minority World, and he's like, oh shit, they weren't even going to hit me to begin with, so now I've caused them to hit me!
And it's like, they're using food luck, and Acacia's
destroying
like...
destroying the fucking planet around them.
Yeah, Acacia's literally, like, growing the Earth and crushing them in a grip of the Earth. They literally chop off a section of the Earth at one point. Just fucking lop it off. I don't know how they lop off the water in that perfectly straight line the way they do with Toriko's jet knife, but he does. He just fucking cuts some of the continent off. It's really cool, actually. I can't go around it any other way, but Toriko has been kind of battered down, and Acacia's like, what happened? What happened to you, Toriko? I thought I killed you, but then you brought back to life and received a power-up. Did you eat God or something? And Toriko's like, no, not yet. There were some guys I wanted to eat it before me. Acacia's like, it doesn't matter anymore. Disappear! And he goes to chomp Toriko, but Star June throws himself in the way and is eaten instead.
I don't know how this works.
How he throws himself in the way and gets eaten instead?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, logically, you'd think he'd just keep, like, going forward.
I'll just press my face forward some more with this thing in the way. I do like the way that Acacia is drawn in the when he's mocking Toriko and then when he moves down towards him because he opens his mouth and, like, he's got, like, you know, shark teeth, you know, rows and rows of teeth growing forward in order to loom down towards him.
Oh, he makes him look, like, really creepy. Yeah. He's gaining some of that neo-creepiness.
Mm-hmm. There's something just very alien and cool about it, though.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very interesting. I love this chapter. I love it when, like, heroes have to work together to defeat a villain that's, like, stronger than them, but because the heroes are so strong, they make an interesting match for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I like what Toriko said, like, yeah, no, there's some people I wanted to eat God before me, which a prediction I would think is that he's referring to maybe Sunny, Coco, and Zebra, and maybe they'll show up now, powered up from God. Because last time we saw them, they had been killed by Froze, but we knew that they were revived by Chi-Chi, so they're still out there. You know, God had been prepared, so maybe they'll eat it, get stronger, give time for Toriko to eat it, get a power up, and then come back. But it's sad. This is what seems like the end of Star Dream, because the whole thing is that if Acacia eats you, or Neo, rather, you don't come back. Like, it's being eaten into oblivion, so...
I hope there's just some roundabout way, because, I mean, it's pretty obvious Star Dream and Toriko are brothers.
Yes.
You know, like... And I want them to do something with this. I don't want it to just be like, oh, remember Star Trek?
Toriko, before I go, you must know you are my brother.
No!
And our parents are...
Son of a... He crawls into Acacia's mouth like, God damn it, give me those body parts back.
I mean, I don't know how exactly, like, you know, like, growing miracle water, things like that could maybe work. I don't, I'm not too well-versed in Toriko's, like, finer points, but possibly still, there's just a lot to kind of see and hope that we'd get, because it's not like they've had that compelling a relationship. Like, I don't look at Star Dream and be like, oh, well, that's the Vegeta of this series.
Yeah, they really have it, like, but I want them to.
Yeah.
I want them, but it's... Star June's dead and never coming back.
I'm not going to bother trying with that. People actually die in Toriko.
Yeah.
But still, I thought this was a really cool chapter. I thought it was really fun, really exciting. I liked a lot of the action in it. And Acacia's becoming a terrifying dude.
Yep.
So. Let's move on to World Trigger to finish things up. Chapter 157, Tamakoma 2, Part 18. We open things up with Yuma taking on Ikoma in hand-to-hand combat. Well, sort of hand-to-hand. He's still missing part of his arm, so he's just doing the whole trick where he just sticks a blade through it. So, they're exchanging blows, and I love the little bit with Ikoma because he says, "That's not going to work. I've seen this move in the doubt in the logs thousands of times." That wait, stop, hold on, stop, stop.
Ah, stop guys, moving. Start.
So he and his teammate back off a bit, and he uses his specialty Ikoma slash to try and take out Yuma from a distance, taking out buildings along the way as well. The commentators are analyzing this, saying, "Oh, yeah, you see, you know, they use different bullet triggers as well as the Ikoma world." Well, he's not even using an Ikoma world; it's just a regular one. They're managing to keep out of Kuga's range because he doesn't have anything to take them out at that distance. Plus, by fighting him in this way, they're gradually cutting down on the wires. And there won't be any new wires because something's out. So, actually, pretty good strategy despite the fact that they're just kind of going, Tatsu? Is that his name? Not Tatsu. Toma. Got it.
Yes.
Toma says, like, well, it doesn't look like they're actually giving it everything that they've got, though, so maybe this is a diversion so that Oki can sneak in and take out Chika while they're just keeping Kuga held down. And it looks like Oki is still, of course, trying to take her down, but he can't manage to get a beat on her because Usami's keeping track of him. So Oki ends up moving out of position, and let's see. Okay, so eventually Yuma manages to break the stalemate by using... Okay, my favorite thing about the way Yuma fights is the way he uses the grasshopper.
It is the coolest part of it.
It's so cool.
Like, the way that he specializes in it, he keeps on coming up with these different ways of just, I use a launching platform. I used it to jump around and stuff, but then it's like, oh, I managed to get that one to launch that guy up in the air so he would be off balance and I would get him. And this time, I'm going to use it to launch a fucking cinder block into this guy's chin.
It's so fucking cool.
It's so cool, and it's something like, have any of us thought, oh yeah, of course you could put other stuff on a grasshopper. I mean, we've seen people use grasshoppers on other people, but like, I would never have thought like, oh yeah, you know, you could use it for anything. It's like a trampoline.
And Mizukami,
it's so cool.
Mizukami is thinking as he's dazed with this, you just throw debris with a grasshopper.
Like, he can't even be angry at first. He's just like, that fucking happened.
Chika manages to snipe him with a lead bullet, but all of a sudden, Oji comes flying and is like, mine!
Oh my god, he just steals that point!
Mizukami's like, wait, you took me out?
It's always so brutal when they like chop heads off and stuff. But I mean, yeah, Mizukami like, oh hey, oh shit, it's you. Oh, you know, like before he goes out, it's so funny to me. Like, oh, here's a decapitated head. Like, oh gosh darn.
Oh, you jeez.
No hesitation from Ikoma, though. He uses a whirlwind, and Oji manages to dodge part of it, but his leg gets taken out by the tail end of the dodge. Zoe's like, well, this is kind of bad, because he's the last one left. One leg now. Well, the fuck is he going to go after snipers? But at that point, Chika suddenly starts using the Ibis to blow shit up. And then she switches to her lead bullet, tries to go after Oji, he dodges it, tries to go after Ikoma, just catches it on his sword.
So cool!
Unflinching. And so the commentators break it down again, because they say, it's like, okay, yeah, well, how are they going to reach her? Because they've got to get through the wire zone, and they've got to get through Kuga all at once. Oki can't manage to get a bead on her, one of these attackers has to just dive in past Yuma and get after her. So how the hell are they going to manage this? So the first time I read this, because the main commentator girl says this way, what would you do in this situation? And just flashback is like, wouldn't he just launch a barrage of grenades?
And that'd be pretty effective, you know?
At this point, yeah. But he says, well, I was talking with Izumi about this, and we have agreed that a meteor to sweep the wires is the best solution. It's like, well, that's what you would do, yes! But he's like, yeah, you know, you would remove a lot of debris that you could use to cover yourself from the sniper, yeah, but, I mean, you'd have to be removing either wires or a sniper by just laying down some suppression fire like that. And also, you know, sniping doesn't work well against our captain, so that's what we would do.
Well, it's an interesting note. I wonder if that's, like, actually a legitimate thing, because he can sense people's feelings towards him if it's impossible to snipe him, because he can sense that killing intent on them or whatever.
If we see Kaguya Squad go up against Tamakoma 2 again, and Chika manages to take him down with a lead bullet, because she's not trying to actually take him out.
Oh, that'd be
so cool.
Because she doesn't want to hurt him.
I feel... So it's not 10. I'm angry you said that, because now if it doesn't happen, I'm going to be sad.
Like the most perfect prediction to bring it all together. Yeah. Oki does manage to finally, of course, get a beat on Chika and starts to suppress her, and he just starts focusing on that. He's like, okay, look, I'll keep her occupied. Captain, you take over from here. And so, of course, you know, without Chika providing suppression fire, now it's just, okay, we'll take on Yuma. And sure, he's got the wires working for him, but he doesn't have supporting fire as well. But Oji sees is like, oh, this is an opportunity for me, too. Okay, so in that case, that means that Iko is going to... Yep, here it comes. Starts taking out buildings and buildings with his attack.
So and Iko's cool.
Iko's just like, yeah, there's no more sniper fire, so we just gotta cut down all these houses. Fuck them.
This is the coolest part, though. This is fucking awesome.
So Oji's like, yep, okay, this is what he's gonna do. And Oji also closes in on Yuma while everything's collapsing around them. And he's like, okay, gotta take you down. And he was like, hey, remember that trick I showed you with the grasshopper and the debris? What if I combined that with a wire attack? Just last
hey, that's so what? Fucking cool.
And it was like, 3 points, bitch!
I love the way he says it, too. That's a third point for us. And then just throws two fucking scorpions right into him. It's such an awesome panel.
Oh, it's so cool.
I actually had to say, I was a little bit confused by this one last panel. And I want to ask you guys what you think about this, because I saw the two of them, and I thought, okay, Yuma's clearly got one of them, but is it possible that Ikoma sniped a point too?
Nah, there wouldn't be a point, because it's simultaneous shots. It would go, I think, to Zomo, or it would go to Yuma anyway.
I don't know, I just saw the two of them, and I was like, well, they did establish OG stealing a point earlier, so...
I think what's honestly might happen out of this is that Ikoma Squad's going to leave without gaining any points.
Well, I mean, it's actually also possible that they could win still.
They could.
Yeah.
Because how many points... It's, what, 2 points for each surviving member, right?
I do believe so, yeah.
So they could still, if they kill Osama...
That could even lead to a tie, actually. If Chika and Yuma manage to take one of them out, but then they lose. Because then it would be 2 points for taking out Chika and Yuma, and then 2 points for the survival. It could actually be a draw at this point. Hmm. It does seem as though Tamakoma 2 is going to win at this rate, of course. Because it doesn't look like Oji's going to survive that double sword attack. I don't know, I'm curious to see how it goes. I hope Ikoma doesn't just get goose egg. they're too cool to get schooled that badly.
Yeah, they got stuff to do, okay? There's eggplant curry to eat.
It's really
cool. Girls to not hit on because we're too nervous. I don't know what to think about it. I really like this chapter, though. Just some really cool inventive techniques that we're still seeing Tamakoma 2 come up with. Just ever since we got this whole, okay, time to get serious and show up and come with new techniques, seeing all three of them develop and come together has been really satisfying so far.
It's so nice, yeah, to see them come together, and they have this strategy that it doesn't work if one of them is gone. You know, like, Osamu's out, but he set up the stage for them.
Yes.
And it's because Osamu set up the stage that Yuma was able to do this. It's because Chica's laying down the sniper fire and, you know, had injured a bunch of people with her lead bullets that they're able to get these points. It's really the team effort. It's nobody's going rogue. I love it. I really love it.
And how satisfying is it to see Oji, who's been completely calm and collected through this whole thing, just like, oh, this happened, so I'll have to do this. Oh, you think that you can stop me because I've only got one hand? Sorry, I'm not that weak. Well, in this situation, Iko's going to cut down the building, so I'll just make my way through. And then Yuma tangles him up, and he's just like, what the fuck happened?
Wait a sec. Not in my calculations.
Oh, it's so awesome. There's so much to this chapter. This has been a really great rank war battle. And it's just, you know, so much to digest.
Marlene mentioned it, I think maybe on the last podcast, but, like, they start new rank wars, and it's like, I enjoy the rank wars, but it's kind of like, okay, yeah, that's nice. Anyway, let's get on with the main story, you know? But this one has been like, oh yeah, just show us more Ikoma Squad, just show us more Ikoma Squad. And it's been great. Like, I'm so sad that they're at the end of the rank war, and I never thought I'd say that because
mm-hmm.
other story, please. Like, I love the series, but... And soon we get Hughes, hopefully.
Alright.
Guys.
Well, that is gonna do it. Let's wrap things up by naming our favorites this week, our MVPs, and our series, our favorite series this week. Finally, so why don't you go first?
Should I just name them both now? Or
go ahead, why not?
Okay, well, and it's not because I'm biased, but favorite chapter is World Trigger, and MVP is Yuma for that amazing attack!
I mean, Yuma did fucking do a lot of stuff.
Beasted!
I really wasn't sure when I started this up. I think I guess it's going to be World Trigger. Yeah. But I don't know. I think that I just didn't, like, process everything fully the first time I read through everything this week. And so I went in having no idea, honestly, what I was going to choose. But going through it again is like, geez, that's just a really good action-packed chapter. And so I think I got to go with World Trigger, too.
I think it's going to be a sweep then. I'm going with World Trigger. That was my favorite this week.
It
was
such
an awesome chapter. It's chapters like this that really show why I've kind of fallen in love with this series so much. And my MVP this week's Yuma. That just the use of the grasshopper, that finishing maneuver, like Yuma used in this way is just so perfectly well done.
Not a duck face to be found.
No, like, dude, that fucking just killer instinct there. And this, the World Trigger also won the fan poll.
Yeah, it did.
Yay.
Clean goddamn sweep. Who's my MVP?
Come on, just sweep it. Sweep
just
it, man.
Just sweep it, Nick.
It's too easy.
Just sweep it.
Just sweep
it's too
it.
Easy. Who else could it possibly be? Hang on.
No one else. Just pick Yuma.
Just pick Yuma.
It's Yuma.
Yes.
We're looking around. I'm looking around between the chairs. I was like, no one else stood out as much. God damn it. God damn it, Bolt. This is your fault somehow.
Hey, you could have given it to Naruto for not being a.
Yeah, you take that headband, Naruto MVP. You shame your son. Alright, let's wrap things up. Thank everyone for joining us for Weekly Manga Recap, where we gush about World Trigger and nothing else. We record the show Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on hitbox.tv/RoloT. You can also follow us on Twitter in case we do need to change things up in terms of our schedule. Follow us at RoloT, at YRoller of Time. Follow the podcast at WMR Podcast. And, of course, follow Annalisa at Kaito Ace. Also, be sure to check out our past episodes. You can find them on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com. You can find them on YouTube, where we post the visual version, where you can just see our Twitter tags, so you don't have to figure out how the fuck they're spelled. And also, of course, check us out on iTunes. Be sure to subscribe, leave a comment, leave a rating, and help us beat the woodworkers.
We need it. It's every day, Nick. You know what's on my bucket list, Nick? To beat the woodworking podcast. To be in the top 10. Look, I don't have aspirations. I've never been a dreamer. I'm not going to sit here and be like, we could be the number one hobby podcast in iTunes. It's too big. Top 20, though. Top 20. I could die a happy man.
We almost hit top 50 at one point. Top 20 is not a larger-than-life goal to have.
You'd think. Yeah. But then, week after week, our audience lets us down.
Shame on all of you.
Shitting on the audience.
To our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy. We just recorded the Q&A episode, for example, and put that up on Podbean. You can go and check that out for free. This coming Friday, I think that... not coming Friday... I don't know when it's actually going to get posted, but sometime this coming weekend, we will be recording the Weekly Manga Recap Lives bonus episode, and that will be posted up sometime, I'm sure. It'll probably go up, I think, around or before the next week's episode.
Yeah, you should see it within about the next week or so. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be, I mean, we haven't recorded yet, but I feel like it's going to be a really fun episode.
There's some good chapters on there that I'm looking forward to doing.
Yes. Also, want to give a special thanks to Ethan and Eugenia, who are our newest patron supporters. Thank you very much. It is greatly appreciated.
Thank you. Thanks also go out to Steve Mann, our tarot card artist. You can check out his work in a bunch of different locations, such as NorakFanboy.DeviantArt.com, his Tumblr, his Patreon, and, of course, Infamous Planet, who helps create the frame that you see around us.
Actually, I want to make a correction on that. I think it's Ethan. I thought it was a T, but I think it's an F. I don't know. FN? F-on?
F-on,
I think. F-on, thank you. Sorry, I thought that was a T. My eyes naturally read that as a T. I'm sorry.
Whatever. Just mispronounce somebody's name. Who could have thought that this would happen?
I'm trying to think where. I think it may have been an email or a comment someone had. Like, Chris Senpai mispronounced my name like I always dreamed. I was like, well, it is on the Patreon reward.
Also, I think that's Ohenia.
Ohenia?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, anyway.
You get what you pay for. My broken presumption of a names.
All right. That is going to do it, guys. Thank you guys so much for watching the show and for supporting it. And thank you, Annalisa, for being here with us again. It's always
Thanks
a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's always fun, especially when World Trigger sweeps!
This is going to make her weak.
It is!
Like, a meteor is going to come down and destroy her home, but she's still going to be like, World Trigger sweep!
It's like next week, like, Ikoma is going to brutalize Yuma and Chika and then reveal he's actually a huge racist or something. You're like, oh, you're way less cool now.
never mind.
Is this the first sweep ever? I feel like it's not.
It's not the first sweep ever.
Because I feel it's the first sweep when we've had a guest on, I think, though. Which feels more significant.
Check on that. Because we definitely had sweeps with the audience poll and the MVP before. But let's see. Because, let's see, there was that one time when fucking Tekken was like, oh yeah, Bleach is my favorite series of the week. God damn it. No, it was close, actually, the last time that Annalise was on the show, because Nisekoi swept for us, but One Piece won the audience poll. And also, we had different MVPs,
That's the big thing, is that we picked the same series, the same MVP. So. In fact, if the audience could pick an MVP, which I'm never going to do, because that'd be way too much
work. Way too many choices.
But, if they could, they would have said Yuma. They picked Yusei, someone who's not even in this chapter.
Hey, he's cool too.
He is cool. He's not in this chapter.
We'll get to see him be really cool soon, hopefully, maybe.
Maybe. All right.
Thanks.
That's gonna do it. Anything that's you wanna it. Say before we head out of here? Any Aunt Lisa, as you say goodbye here, is there any sage advice from the Ghost Camel that you can leave our audience with?
I have a couple pieces of not so sage advice, but pimping, if you don't mind.
Ooh, no, go right ahead.
All right, so some of you guys know this, but Jump is posting free chapters on their website.
Oh, metaphorical pimping. Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I'm
simultaneously disappointed and relieved that we're not going to get brought up on charges.
Can't you? After the recording. After the recording.
Yeah.
But so Shonen Jump's posting free chapters. I'm working with Marlene on Astra Lost in Space, and it is so good, guys. It is so good, and it's super free to read if you are in one of the English Shonen Jump territories. Unfortunately, it's not worldwide, but it's so good and super free, and we release two chapters a week until we catch up. If you like Skit Dance or anything, it's the same guy, but it's a space sci-fi. It's great. It's so good. But the other thing... is last month Chris donated a bunch of Haikyuu volumes to the Ashihara Sensei care package, and thanks for everybody that sent in their banner and letters and all that. And so this month we're gonna have another contest. I have four extra copies of World Trigger 12, which just came out last week, I think. It has Nasu on the cover. It looks really cool. So it's the same deal as last month. Just send in your fan art, fan goods, fan works, whatever, and you're entered to win one of these. If you've already sent in something, if you want to send something in again and get entered in this month, that's cool. If you're a weekly manga recap...
I don't like why you're laughing this much.
If you want, you could choose a scene from Chris's fanfic, and I will terribly draw it for you. It will look so bad, but I will draw it to the best of my
ability. So that's part of the reward for sending something into the care package.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not just a World Trigger volume. You get the World Trigger volume... and a drawing of any scene from World Trigger to My Heart and Backdoor. Any of the parts?
Any of the parts. And it's going to look terrible. I'm telling you, it will be the ugliest thing you have ever received in the mail. But I will draw it for you.
I'm going to tell you this right now. I'm entering into this contest now. I'm gonna get something. I'm putting it in. I'm sending it in because I know what I want you to draw if this comes to pass. So the only way you guys can stop me from torturing this poor girl is by sending in so many entries that mine can't possibly win. Because I'm telling you, by the end of this week, I'm sending something out.
Oh, man. So the deadline for this one will be the end of this month.
All right.
I'll see, like, maybe we'll have prizes every month. I'll see what I can dig up. So come on, guys!
Yeah, let's get something awesome to send over to Ashihara-sensei. You're pretty cool. Alright. Now we need, like, a hilarious topic to go out on. Nick, you just gonna drink water? Yeah, you gonna help? You're like Pontius Pilate washing yourself of this podcast. You're like, done with this. But you know what, Nick? Pontius Pilate could never clean his hands. They could never be fully clean again. Because you want to know why? The weight of Jesus' conviction was on them forever. Just like the weight of this podcast not having an amusing ending is on your hands forever.
You know I'm agnostic and that this has, you know, like, no impact on me, you pulling all these references out.
Yeah, well, I hope hell has Buccaneers games for you. In fact, considering how the Bucks usually play, they probably do.
Hey, we won this week.
Yeah, damn. Well, imagine this is like one of the other 15 weeks of the year where you guys don't. Goodbye, everybody.